You are listening to a sermon by John Friesen, recorded on Sunday, May 17, 2009, at the Point Grey Intermennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only, and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Over the years, I have met thousands of students, university students, Regent College students, students in Bible schools, and they have described their world as being in a state of booming, buzzing confusion. That state is, in many ways, a good state to be in. To begin looking seriously at many different alternatives. And I have been in that state myself as a student of the university and other institutions, a booming, buzzing confusion. And we live in a very fragmented world, a world which takes us here and there, which pulls us in this direction or that direction, and we find ourselves in a state of confusion. That is a state of many people in the contemporary world. And some people have attempted to escape that particular condition by living in their own little worlds. They've isolated themselves from the confusion. In the field of psychology, for example, we have approximately 140 different theories of personality. And each of these theories is based upon serious thought and often research. They are competing theories. And the psychology department at UBC in their first year presents one theory, and that is the behavioral theory, the learning theory. And students come away from that thinking that that is the truth, not knowing that there are very many competing theories to the behavioral theory. In my department, in the graduate field, we teach 10 different theories of psychotherapy. But unfortunately, students, when they come out of that particular course, they feel that they are disoriented and disjointed. They don't have any integrated point of view. They're confused. It takes at least a few years for them to kind of come to some sort of unity of thought where they can zero in on a core belief as to who they are and how their knowledge integrates with their personality and their history and their culture. And that is a sorry state that we are in contemporary world. The philosopher Hegel, some of you may have heard of him, he has developed a very important way of addressing confusion and conflict. He says that there is a thesis, antithesis, and finally synthesis. And most of us are either in the antithesis perspective, antithesis camp, or we're in the thesis camp, and we never come to consensus. We never come to synthesis. We never come to the point where we resolve our differences. We find that in the church, in theology, there are many denominations. And so Regent students often are presented with these alternative theological points of view. And they find themselves in considerable difficulty trying to sort out which is the truth. We are all in search of inner peace and tranquility. We're all in search of an identity which is central to who we are, which describes our belief system and describes our culture, in which we have integrated many different points of view. It took me almost a lifetime to develop my particular perspective on psychotherapy, which we finally published. But it took a lifetime, here and there and here and there, pulling ideas. Well, we find ourselves in that dilemma in the Christian world as well. We live in a world where there has been, as Andre has shown, there has been a debate between Christian faith and science, between materialism and spirituality. And the last few hundred years, that debate has intensified and has become a very serious concern to many Christians. How does one reconcile these opposing viewpoints? Is there a common meeting ground? And I'd like to present to you some ideas with regard to a common meeting ground. The attempt to reconcile faith and learning has been a central theme of my life. Already in my graduate years at the University of BC, I started a Sunday afternoon discussion group, which was devoted to debating opposing viewpoints around Christian faith and some academic disciplines. And the church was threatened by that after some months, and they told us to close it down. Not realizing that the Oxford movement. How many of you have heard of the Oxford movement? Yes. This too was a student-led movement. And Charles Wesley, for example, indicated in some of his writings that in one of those meetings, his heart was strangely warmed as he listened to the discussion and the dialogue that took place during that movement. And out of that movement grew, out of that student movement, grew a large movement in society generally known as the Methodist or Wesleyan movement, which interestingly today is very much addressing the issue of faith and learning and the integration of science and theology. And that's what this morning's all about. It's about how do we integrate science, or other academic subjects for that matter, and our theology. So, for me, this search for a common ground for the integration between faith and learning has been a lifelong passion. And more recently, I became an editor, at least a guest editor, of a journal called the Direction Journal, where I invited a number of people to address that particular question in the Mennonite Brethren Conference. And I was somewhat appalled by the lack of really an integrative perspective. What happens is that people are trained in theology, or they're trained in an academic subject, and the two don't meet. That's our dilemma in the church today. We need people with PhDs in a secular topic, say that be that in psychology or biology or whatever, and a PhD in theology, so that we begin to address the current and contemporary issues which we face in society. And Andre has already illustrated how various people throughout the centuries have addressed this particular dilemma. Perhaps the most influential antagonist, I'm talking about an antagonist, one who opposes the Christian worldview, is a guy by the name of Richard Dawkins. How many have heard of Richard Dawkins? Okay. Richard was on campus at UBC just a year ago, and I got tickets. He spoke at the Chan Center, and there was simply an overflow audience to hear Richard Dawkins. His book, The God Delusion, is probably one of the most influential books that have been written in the last number of years. And Dawkins, at this lecture and in his book, presented his arguments in which he tried to undermine the Christian view of God and the Christian view of life. And here are his major arguments. One, he said, religion is irrational. Faith, he argued, is not to think rationally, but irrationally. Secondly, he said, there is an inherent tension between science and faith, an inherent tension. Three, belief in God can be explained away psychologically and biologically. And of course, if you'll recall your coursework in Freud, who said that religion is a neurosis, it's a psychopathology. Well, that's the theme that Dawkins picked up. And the final major theme is that belief in God leads to violence. Belief in God leads to violence. And of course, he provided a great deal of evidence in support of that particular position. But there are, of course, problems with his argumentation. I do not have time this morning to refute these arguments. I wish only to say that his arguments lacked scientific evidence and logical development. Dawkins reminded me of an evangelist. His emotional presentation lacked validity and logical development. Despite this reality, his audience, which was largely student, cheered his ridicule of the Christian faith. I've never seen as much applause given to a man who really argued irrationally. On Thursday of this week, May 15, Douglas Todd reviewed the film Angels and Demons in the Vancouver Sun. Erna and I went to see this film on the same night. This film tackles the debate between the church and science. It takes some bold swings at the leaders of the Roman Catholic Church for their attitude toward science. The film argues that science and the church are not reconcilable. It maintains that the church has, through the centuries, feared the findings of science. This fear of science is, of course, why our forefathers built private schools and colleges. I personally grew up in a culture which feared the findings of science. When I first entered the University of British Columbia as a freshman, my first essay, which I submitted to the English 100 instructor, was entitled, A Defense of Creationism. In this essay, I challenged the dominant arguments which supported a secular viewpoint. It's also interesting that since I was an undergraduate student, the Big Bang theory of the origin of the universe has been enunciated. Before that, we didn't know about how the universe started. At least we didn't have a concept. My professor was very kind to my arguments in my essay. He did not condemn them, but his comments suggested that he too had grown up with these viewpoints. He gave me a second class standing for the essay, which nearly 60 years ago was a reasonably good mark, because first class marks were very seldomly given. Today, we try to gain the support and popularity of our students by increasing the marks of students. Perhaps also so they don't go away with a neurosis. Unfortunately, the leaders of the Christian church have not fully recognized that all truth is God's truth. Faith and science need not be locked into a mortal struggle for superiority. Rather, both have important contributions to make as pathways to truth. Science addresses the material world. Faith addresses the spiritual world. Both are important ingredients of a balanced and comprehensive and coherent worldview. Another film opened this week in Vancouver. It is entitled Fierce Light. This is a deeply spiritual film and promotes the importance of agape love and love for one's neighbor. It views Jesus as a revolutionary, as a rebel of the heart. It calls for looking at the Sermon on the Mount as a starting place for Christianity. The film argues that Jesus was about beating swords into plowshares and loving your neighbor as yourself. These two films demonstrate the importance of the Christian faith in society today. The debate between faith and science, between faith and culture, between faith and everyday life runs deeply in our society. Another example of the prominence of faith in the public press is an article which appeared in April 13th Newsweek Journal. Some of you may have seen it. Newsweek. The Decline and Fall of the Church, it is entitled. This penetrating article is concerned about the future of the Christian church in America. And the thesis of the article is that while the Christian church is not dead in American life, it is less of a force in politics and culture than in any other time in history. While the Christian faith is under attack in the process of secularization in the world, there's a new movement, and that I want to really emphasize that. There's a new movement in the Christian world which is headed by a new group of leaders in the church. These are people with dual degrees and dual interests. They're not only theologians. They're also scientists and literary writers and people who have made it in the secular world. They have a well-developed understanding of the struggle between science and faith, but have also developed a deep and abiding faith in the person of Jesus Christ and his redemption of the world. This movement was started years ago by people such as C.S. Lewis at Oxford, whose writings have strongly influenced contemporary Christian thought, that is, these particular new leaders which are emerging. In some way, they are the new evangelicals that are coming into being. These leaders, however, go beyond the teachings of C.S. Lewis and his worldview. Some of the current leaders of the Christian Church, whose work I strongly support, have demonstrated their competence in public universities and research institutes. I'm now thinking of a name that Andre has already suggested, Jerry Collins, who headed the Genome Project in the United States, which unraveled the mystery of the human genome. His work has made a massive contribution to our understanding of human genetics and the human transmission system. Back when I was an undergraduate student at the University of BC, I took the only genetics course that was available at UBC. This was a completely undeveloped field. Now I assume there must be dozens of courses in this field, and we've made immense progress in understanding how characteristics are transmitted from generation to generation. Collins is a Christian. He's written a marvelous book called The Language of God. How many of you have read The Language of God? Oh, that's a marvelous piece of work, and I recommend it strongly. In this book, Collins describes not only the Genome Project, but also his Christian faith. Collins now heads a group of Christian scholars whose interest is in addressing the relationship between faith and learning. He and his colleagues have developed an outstanding series of lectures under the leadership of the Wesley Ministry Network. I have a sampler of some of these lectures. I think, yes, here. You can pick this up at Regent College for free, but you pay heavily for the 135 minutes of outstanding lectures by some of the most capable and contemporary scientists and Christians. Okay. So there's one pathway to truth that we've learned about, we've taught about in Sunday school, and that is through revealed truth. We know that pathway. But there's another pathway to truth, which is something that these new scientists are talking about. So there are two pathways which arise from the discoveries that we are making. Those discoveries in the natural world and those discoveries in revealed truth. The revealed truth lies in Jesus Christ as the Son of God and Savior of the world. Both pathways should be honored by us and should be honored by the Church. These are not irrational. We need not fear the truths of science and the truths of revelation. Both sets of truth lead us to God. They are complementary rather than conflictual. While our time's moving along, I was going to talk a bit about a guy by the name of Alistair McGrath. Alistair probably is the leading evangelical scholar in the evangelical world today. He has written some 40 books and over 100 articles. He's written four books on the integration of faith and learning. And I am very much impressed with his scholarship. Well, I'm pleased to say that this movement, this new movement in Christian thought and practice, is beginning to have an influence on the Mennonite Brethren beliefs and practices of the church. Erna and I attended the last provincial conference several weeks ago. New leadership in the conference has emerged. This leadership recognizes the need for a better understanding of what it means to be the church in contemporary society. It takes seriously a relational theology, which, if I can recall correctly, Cal Dewick, some 10 or 12 years ago when he was the coordinator of this center, brought to our attention. But relational theology is a central theme of this new evangelical movement which is emerging. I was obviously very pleased at the conference with a unanimous passage of 7 resolutions addressing university student ministry. After more than 50 years of good intentions, the MB conference has committed itself to an engagement with the university. I will not read those resolutions, but they commit themselves to an engagement with the university. Now, what will this engagement look like? This engagement must incorporate the findings of science into our personal and theological worldview, and must recognize that science and faith are compatible. They're not incompatible worldviews. They're completely complementary. So that's one particular tenet which I'm promoting, the MB leadership. The second is that there are two worlds, the material world and the spiritual world. And the material world is governed by natural theology, and the spiritual world by revealed theology. And the two need to meet each other. They need to touch each other. Thirdly, the scientific method provides important discoveries in the material world. In contrast, the highest form of discovery in the spiritual world is in the establishment of a meaningful relationship with the universe, with the cosmos, but certainly with the person of Jesus Christ. Fourthly, all truth is God's truth. And finally, the theology of relationality is a central construct of both the field of natural theology as the field of revealed theology. Well, we just started, I think, on this topic, but I'll turn it back to you.